the assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trump, and I'm your host, Katie Trump. Well, how's everybody's bracket looking after last night? Because I know mine got completely obliterated. My final four is now just a final one. Luckily, my champion's still in it, but they play tonight, so we'll see what happens. The first round of the Sweet 16 began last night, and we'll just say my bracket is completely decimated. And I'm sure there's a few others along the way because we had some pretty big upsets. So let's talk about the games that happened last night. Let's start it off in the West bracket with Gonzaga versus Arkansas. You know, Arkansas came in and they basically dominated Gonzaga from the start. They played some excellent defense, and that's actually where Arkansas really, really has an edge with every team that they go up against, is they play very scrappy defense. And that's just what they did to Gonzaga, because Gonzaga is an offensive team. If they start lighting you up from the three-point line or just really anywhere, they're a great shooting team, and that's their bread and butter. But they just were frustrated all night long, and Arkansas just was able to absolutely dominate. And Arkansas ended up winning 74-68 and is moving on to the Elite Eight. Then the other matchup we had last night in the same bracket was Texas Tech versus Duke. And, Coach K, he continues to move on. His career is extended at least for the rest of this weekend. Duke, they ended up beating Texas Tech last night, 78-73. It was a close battle from start to finish. And Duke's moving on. And so now in the Elite Eight, it's going to be in the West bracket, it's going to be Arkansas versus Duke. So that's going to be a very interesting matchup to watch. And then last night we had in the South Side bracket, we had Arizona versus Houston. Houston comes in with another upset too. Houston absolutely dominated Arizona. You know, Arizona was kind of like the team that a lot of people were banking on to win the championship this year, just because they are overall a very, very good team. But Houston's a very, very underrated team. I don't think a lot of people realize how good Houston really is, and it is because they aren't like a big name brand team. They absolutely dominated Arizona last night, 72-60, and they are moving on to the Elite Eight. And then the last game from last night was Villanova versus Michigan. And Michigan played a great game. They actually had the lead a couple times in this game. In the first half, it kind of looked like they were going to end up dominating, but Villanova, they did what they normally do, and they came out with the win 63-55, and they are moving on to the Elite Eight. So in the South Side bracket, the Elite Eight is going to be Houston versus Villanova, and that's fucking awesome to see Houston in there in the South Side bracket, because, you know, I keep referencing Lil Kiki South Side every time I bring up the South Side bracket, and that's H-Town, baby, so we'll see what happens there. And then tonight's Sweet 16 matchups. First matchup I've got is North Carolina versus UCLA. Of course, I UCLA's who I picked to win the championship, so of course I had to ride with UCLA in this matchup. Although North Carolina, man, they are really showing out. At first, when the tournament began, I didn't really think North Carolina had a chance at anything, and they're doing what they normally do, win when they need to. And so this could be a huge matchup for UCLA tonight. But I still think UCLA is just overall the better team. And their core's been there. They know what to do. They made the Final Four last year. But they can't sleep on North Carolina. That's for damn sure. And then the other matchup in the East bracket is Purdue versus the Cinderella team this year, St. Peter's. I have Purdue moving on. That's who I've had moving on from the beginning of my bracket. So While I like what St. Peter's is doing, I think their Cinderella run is going to come to an end tonight. But hey, man, wouldn't be shocked to see them move on, because sometimes the Cinderella can get all the way down to the Final Four. That's something that tends to happen. So Purdue better be on alert, but Purdue's actually a really good team, so I don't actually expect them to have a problem moving on tonight from St. Peter's. And then moving over to the Midwest bracket, you got Kansas versus Providence. I had Kansas moving on to the Elite Eight at the beginning of my bracket, so I'm going to go ahead and ride with them still against Providence. You know, Providence is a pretty good team, and they've been playing great basketball so far. But Kansas has been doing what Kansas normally does, especially come tournament time, and that's kick some ass. And then the other matchup you have is Iowa State versus Miami, the U. And I have the U moving on in this one. I did kind of pick Iowa State to be my kind of Cinderella team, and so I really wouldn't be shocked if they moved on. Actually, this matchup is very evenly matched. This could be like the game that goes into maybe an overtime or a possible double overtime, because I think these two teams match up very well against each other. They both shoot great. So I think this is probably going to be the matchup of the weekend. And like I said, I've got Miami moving on. So the Elite Eight for the weekend for me, you know, the West is already set. That's Arkansas versus Duke. And so in that matchup, I'm going to go ahead and take Duke. While I think Arkansas is a great team, they play great defense, and I think they can match up well against Duke. There's something about Duke this season, and it might be just because it's Coach K's last season, that his team's really, they're playing great. And they just seem to keep eking out these wins. And every time you think they're down, they're not out. And so I actually do think Duke's going to go ahead and get the best of Arkansas in that matchup and move on into the Final Four. Then in the South Side bracket, you've got Houston versus Villanova for the Elite Eight. And in that one, I am going to go ahead and roll with Houston in this. While I think Villanova is an excellent team, I actually think they could potentially win the national championship. That was a team I was looking at beforehand. But there's just something about Houston. They're just playing excellent basketball right now. They're not scared at all. I don't think they're intimidated at all by any of the teams that they're playing. And I think that they like that most people are kind of counting them out and haven't really been looking at them as a legit team. So I have Houston moving on in that matchup. And then in the East bracket, I have UCLA versus Purdue. So if that ends up being the matchup, of course, I'm going to take UCLA, because like I said, that's who my champion is. So I got to roll with them until they bow out. And then this is actually my original Elite Eight selection in the East bracket. I had UCLA versus Purdue. I just thought they were both the best teams, especially in this bracket. But I actually, Purdue was another team I was kind of looking at that could potentially end up as the national champion, just because I think overall they're a really good team. And that should be a great matchup, but I got to ride with UCLA. And then in the Midwest, my Elite Eight matchup would be Kansas versus Miami. And I'm going to roll with Miami in that matchup. While I think Kansas is a spectacular team, there's something about Miami. I've felt this way ever since the end of the season. I watched a couple of Miami games. I hadn't caught them at all, but I was like, wow, this is actually a very, very good team. They shoot great. And I think they're just very underrated, and a lot of people don't expect them to make any noise. So I'm going to go ahead and take the upset in that one and go with Miami. So my Final Four now, my Final Four to begin with ended up Gonzaga versus UCLA, Tennessee versus Auburn. So Gonzaga, Tennessee, and Auburn are all out of it. UCLA is still in it, so that's my lone warrior here. And so now my new Final Four matchup would be Duke versus UCLA and Houston versus Miami. And, you know, just for shits and giggles, I'll go ahead and just pick those matchups if they end up happening. Of course, I would ride with UCLA, because that's what I've been riding with this whole way over Duke. And then in Houston versus Miami, I actually would take Houston, because I think Houston's a good team. So that would make my championship UCLA versus Houston. And of course, like I said, I got to ride with UCLA the whole way. So that's how my bracket's looking. I've only got 33 right out of 63 so far. So my bracket's pretty busted, but it is what it is. I'm sure most people got that Like I called it last week, the good old period stain of the red cross outs all the way through, because it looks like a bloody fucking mess on my bracket, especially right now. So yeah, we'll see. We had some good matchups last night. I expect some more good matchups tonight, and should be a great weekend of college basketball. Let's go ahead and move on to baseball and go over the AL and NL East season preview, and just break down the teams and who I think is going to finish where. So let's start with the NL East, and I'm going to start off with the defending champion Atlanta Braves. I think they're going to win their division again, although I do think they're going to have some competition from the Phillies and the Mets. Both teams got better, but the Braves got better too. I mean, it's kind of rare when the World Series champion, they do lose. They did lose Freddie Freeman, which really sucks. He was their heart and soul. But like I said a couple weeks ago when he initially signed with the Dodgers, that he's like at the end of his career. So it was more sentimental for him to stay with the Braves rather than really a big loss. Because they are going to have Acuña back. So that's going to add to their lineup. I mean, he's an excellent player. And then they did lose Jorge Soler. So that's a big loss as well. But they did add Eddie Rosario, NL MVP, reigning champ there. So added him to your lineup. You got Matt Olson. You traded for him from the A's. I think he's going to fill Freddie Freeman's role perfect. And then they added Kenley Jansen, and Jansen's been one of the best closers in the league over the last, I'd say, at least three seasons. He's been the top dude, so their bullpen just gets even better. That was actually their strength last season, was their starting pitching, and then also their bullpen, and so I think they just got better, because they also, in their bullpen, they've also got Matzik, the workhorse, who basically was, who really helped them on their playoff run and end up winning that World Series. But then also their starting pitching, they still got Freed and they got Morton. And so overall, the Atlanta Braves are a great team, and I don't see any, there really isn't much of a weakness, especially with Acuña coming back. Acuña is one of the best players in the league. And I kind of see him coming in and playing a big role, since he missed basically their entire playoff run. He missed like the whole second half of last season. So I expect him to come back and do big things this year as well. So I expect the Braves, the defending champs, to go ahead and take the NL East this year. But then I think the Phillies will come in second. And they just overall have an excellent batting lineup. They've got Bryce Harper, who had an MVP caliber last year. And I expect him to just get even better, because I don't really see him falling off, at least for a while. Then they picked up Castellanos, who should be big in their lineup. And then also Kyle Schwarber. He's not like the greatest player of all time, but he adds a lot of power to that lineup, especially when he's not injured. So that lineup's going to be really tough to get through. And then they also have some great solid starting pitching as well. They got Wheeler, Nola, and then they picked up Kyle Gibson as well. So they actually have some depth at the pitching. It's just I think the Braves are just a better team, and so that's why I picked them to win the division. But I think the Phillies are going to make it a battle all season long, and they definitely going to be a playoff contender, in my opinion. Then I think the Mets are going to finish in third place. The Mets, they do have a pretty solid batting lineup. They added Starling Marte, so that should help. But they're the Mets. They always, until they do something, you can't really believe in them. But they do have great starting pitching. I will say that. They picked up Max Scherzer in the offseason. They lost Noah Syndergaard, so that's a big deal. But I think Max Scherzer has been solid his entire career. Everywhere he goes, he's a lights-out pitcher. So until he falls off, you really can't write any team off that he's on. But also, like I said, it's the Mets, so you can't really expect much from them. We're going to have Jacob DeGrom back this year, so we'll see where he's at. They got Taijuan Walker as well. They picked up Bassett from the A's. And then they picked up Carrasco, who used to play for the Cleveland Indians, and then he got cancer, and so like he was actually kind of a one of the best pitchers for a while there until he got cancer, and he's still been playing. You know, he's cancer free now, so we'll see what he could do. He's a very solid pitcher, and I think kind of the role he plays with the Mets this year is going to be the role he needs to play, where he's not the star pitcher, but he's going to come in and provide some depth at pitching. So I expect the Mets to be competitive this year. I don't know if I'm going to be picking them to do anything in the playoffs, but they definitely made some moves in their starting pitching, and they should be a pretty decent team to watch this year. Then moving on to the two teams in this division that I think are just going to outright suck, Washington Nationals. The only thing they really have to write home about this year is they've got Juan Soto. He is a spectacular young player. I don't know if they're going to keep him because he did reject a contract extension from them this year. That doesn't mean he won't sign a new contract with them. I mean, he's obviously trying to be one of the highest paid players in the league, as he should, because he's a spectacular, spectacular player. I mean, the guy is, when you watch him hit some of the home runs he hits, it's something else. It's crazy to watch. So he's definitely going to be their bright spot. They did pick up Nelson Cruz as well. So their batting's going to be pretty solid, but mostly overall the Washington Nationals are an old and washed up team. Most of their players get injured. You know, they've had Steven Strasburg the whole time, and he's good when he's not injured, but there's always a time where he gets injured, and beyond him, their starting pitching is pretty mediocre. So I don't really expect much from the Washington Nationals other than Juan Soto's probably going to have a really good year. And then rounding out the NL East is the good old Miami Marlins. You know, they do have a decent hitting lineup. They've got Jazz Chisholm and Aguiar, Rojas, and Avisel Garcia, somebody who they picked up. And then they also picked up Jorge Soler, the World Series MVP. So I think they're going to be able to get some runs, but their pitching is just absolute trash. I mean, overall, they're really not a good team. They're the Marlins, so they do have a World Series, which I don't know how that happened. But, you know, over the years, they've just been kind of the laughingstock team, and I kind of expect them to continue to be the laughingstock team because they don't really have much. Like I said, they're going to score some runs, but their pitching, I don't really see them doing really well this year. So I got the Marlins rounding out the NL East. So I got the Braves finishing in first, Phillies in second, Mets in third, Nationals in fourth, and the Marlins in fifth in the NL East. Moving on to the AL East. Now, this was kind of difficult. I went back and forth between two different teams on who I thought was going to win the AL East. And I think it's going to end up being the Rays. The Tampa Bay Rays, you know, they're that team where they have solid players. They've always had a good farm system, and I think that's one of the reasons why the Rays are so good, because just out of nowhere, they have this really solid pitcher or this great hitter like Randy Arozarena, and they just have this great farm system. So they always end up, it seems like they get rid of a lot of their good players, but then in the farm system, they pick somebody back up and they just come in and take the league by storm. So they do have a great batting lineup. You know, they just signed Wander Franco to a big contract extension this offseason. I mentioned Randy Arozarena, another spectacular hitter, spectacular player. He's just really fun to watch. And then they've still got Austin Meadows as well. So overall, the hitting order or the batting lineup's going to be good. The pitching's not bad either. They picked up Corey Kluber. It's always iffy to see what's going to happen with that guy because he's always injured. But when he's not injured, he's actually a pretty solid pitcher. So I think overall the Rays are a really good team. They're a well-run organization, and they always seem to just quietly win the AL East, and I think they're going to quietly win the AL East again this year. then I think the Red Sox are going to come in second place. I was going back and forth between them and the Rays on who I thought was going to win the division. And really, the only reason why I didn't pick the Red Sox is because their pitching, they don't have a lot of depth at pitching. And their batting lineup's going to be good. They did just add Trevor Story to the squad. I think he's more of he is good in the batting lineup, but I think he's more going to help on the defensive side of things rather than make an impact with hitting. But overall, the Red Sox kind of, they have a good team, but nobody that's going to blow you out of the water like the Rays have Franco and a Rosarena and Meadows. So I kind of see them being just a slightly better team than the Red Sox, but I still expect the Red Sox to be very competitive this year. Then I think in third place is going to end up being the New York Yankees. I actually don't think the New York Yankees, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs again this year. And if they do, they're going to be on the outside. They're going to be one of the lower ranked teams just because overall they still did not do anything to improve their starting pitching this year. And it's got no depth. And so they're pretty much fucked if they get injured. And injuries have been a big deal for the Yankees over the last couple of seasons. I don't understand what's going on with the Yankees. I mean, the Yankees are the Yankees. That's really all you have to say. They're one of the most most standout organizations of all time, one of the biggest brands you will ever see. As a matter of fact, the Forbes list just came out this week that they're still the number one team that makes the most money. It's worth the most. So you look at the Yankees and you kind of everybody has expectations for them, like they need to be winning the World Series. And they're kind of, in my opinion, starting to fall into the status of the Dallas Cowboys because, you know, they are a big brand, but they haven't done shit in years. And that's kind of what the Yankees have turned into. And so over the seasons, I've noticed that their injuries have been just like constant. And you're like, what the hell is going on? You can't get a good like trainer to like keep your guys healthy, because it seems that the Yankees have had a huge problem with injuries compared to everybody else in the league. So that we'll see if that's another theme this season, because it's been a theme for at least the last three or four seasons from what I can remember offhand. They did make a couple of moves. They traded for Josh Donaldson, another injury prone player. So we'll see if that is a factor this season. They re-signed Anthony Rizzo. He's kind of another injury-prone player, so we'll see what happens there. And then there's this this new guy they traded for. He originally was with the Rangers. Rangers traded him to Minnesota about three, four weeks ago, and then Minnesota ended up trading him to the Yankees. His name is Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. I don't know if I pronounced that name correctly, but he's a shortstop, and he's apparently a great prospect. So we'll see if he kind of ends up being this new come up guy. But he was a notable player that they signed this offseason. But then they lost Gio Urshela and Luke Voit and Sanchez. Which I don't think Sanchez is that big of a loss. You could tell he wasn't really fitting in with the pitchers. He was very injury prone as well. But you know, I don't really think the Yankees are going to be much of a force this year. Their hitting's going to be great. They do have, you know, they've got Aaron Judge, they've got Stanton. They've got a lot going on there with their batting. But overall, the pitching is not impressive, including the bullpen as well. So. My hopes are not high for the Yankees this year. Then finishing behind them, I actually think it's going to be the Toronto Blue Jays. They have a ton of offense, which is what's going to be a big deal for them. You know, they still got Vlad Guerrero Jr., Kevin Biggio, Hernandez, who's come on the last couple of years, Bo Bichette. So I expect a lot of offense from them. It's just their starting pitching is very questionable. Actually, their overall pitching is very questionable. They did pick up Kevin Gausman. He played for the Giants last year, and he had a Cy Young season. So they're getting a good pitcher there. But beyond him, their pitching is very questionable. So I didn't really – that's why I have them where they are. I think both – I think the AL East is going to be a battle between four teams. I do think the Red Sox and the Rays are going to be the cream of the crop. But the Yankees and the Blue Jays, I think, will be those teams that come in and make some upsets. And while I don't have high hopes for the Yankees, I still think both of those teams can come in and make some noise. And they're definitely going to make score some points. But I just don't have high hopes for them come playoff time. But I do think it's going to be a battle in the AL East, as it tends to usually be every year. Except for the Baltimore Orioles. I think they're just a trash-ass team. There really isn't anything good to talk about with them. I went over their roster, and I looked at everything about this team, and basically they're probably going to be not going to have many fans in the stands, as that's kind of been the case for Baltimore for a couple seasons, because they haven't been competitive for quite some time. So there's really nothing to say about them, and I expect them to finish in last place. So I've got the AL East looking like this. I got the Rays winning the AL East with the Red Sox coming in second, Yankees in third, Blue Jays in fourth, and rounding out the AL East at number five, the Baltimore Orioles. So let's move on to the NFL. More major movements. I mean, this has got to be one of the craziest March off seasons for the NFL, and I don't even remember. You know, we've had so many trades, we've had so many big signings, and this week Tyreek Hill was traded to the Miami Dolphins from the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, he's been one of the top receivers in the league. It sounded like Kansas City. I think both teams. I think everybody in this trade actually they all win. A lot of people think this is a bad move for Kansas City, but I actually think it's a great move for Kansas City just because they're unloading Tyreek Hill at the right time because they're getting prime value for him. You never know what's going to happen with a guy, especially, you know, the way Tyreek Hill plays. He's a double-edged sword when it comes to being a wide receiver. You know, he can run out there and catch and make big plays catching the ball, but he can also make big plays running the ball. And so that is a lot of wear and tear on your body. And so you never know, some debilitating injury could happen, and the Chiefs are screwed if they just signed him to a big deal. And so I think them trading him is actually a good move. Now, it does definitely deplete their offense by a lot. And, they just signed Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who I don't think is going to be a big replacement for Tyreek Hill. I mean, he was a huge chunk of their offense. But I still think it's a good move by them because they got a first round pick out of it. And plus a bunch of other picks, they really got a good haul in for Tyreek Hill. So I think it was a good move just from that standpoint. And like I said, there are a lot of good wide receivers available this season, both in free agency and in the draft. So I think that's kind of what the Chiefs are looking at. You know, they've got Patrick Mahomes, they still have Travis Kelce. And you still have Andy Reid who can call plays however he wants. So I kind of feel like they're looking to move on, and they were hoping to get the best value out of Tyreek Hill. And I think that's what they did. And then in turn, you know, Miami, I don't think Miami's still going to be like a playoff contending team, just because their quarterback is still Tua. But Tyreek Hill with Waddle on the other side, that's going to be some heat. And those are going to be some tough guys to cover. And so I think that's a great move by Miami, because I think they're actually more looking towards next season. I think they're going to ride with Tua this year and then looking to a new quarterback next year. So I think they're kind of setting that team up to be better next year and hope they could compete this coming season, but I think it's going to be more the following season that they're looking to. And they also made another big signing this week. The Dolphins signed the top offensive lineman out in free agency this year, Teron Armstead. And so they are building a solid offense. They've made quite a few moves. They've even added Raheem Mostert at running back too. So it's basically they're building their offense to hope that Tua was able to at least get them to the playoffs this year. And then no matter what, I have a feeling they're just going to move on from him anyways. And I think that it was a good move for all parties. And then, you know, Tyreek Hill, he gets something like $70 million guaranteed. So he gets what he wanted. He gets paid. And, everybody's happy there. And I think that was just a good trade overall. So that was pretty much the only thing that happened in the NFL this week. Then just a couple of other quick hits. New York City is finally lifting their stupid, idiotic vaccine mandate. So now Kyrie Irving can play in home games in Brooklyn because he's not vaccinated. And then they were also talking about how the baseball players, if any New York Mets or New York Yankees weren't vaccinated, that they weren't going to be able to play home games, which I found to be most amusing because baseball games are played outdoors. Everything that has to do with COVID has been ridiculous and stupid. It's good to see that there isn't going to be an issue with baseball this year with that. And it's also good to see that Kyrie Irving can finally play home games because he seems to be turning on right now for the Nets. So, that could be a very, very good thing because playoff time's rolling around. And there was no need to have that stupid-ass mandate, especially when the majority of this country is vaccinated, so get the fuck over it. And then another quick hit, you know, Jorge Masvidal and Colby Covington. You know, they had a big fight a couple weeks ago in the UFC, and Covington ended up winning. Well, I guess they decided to take it to the streets this week. And Jorge Masvidal attacked, from what the stories say, is he attacked Covington. Who the fuck knows what happened? It could have been, you know, they don't like each other. And obviously, this right here proves it. But basically, Masvidal got arrested. And I'm not really sure what the point of that was. You kind of look stupid for that move. But I guess they really, that just goes to show, they really do not like each other. Even in the streets, Masvidal did not get the win in that round. Since we're getting close, we're closing in on the NBA playoffs, I decided to do another top five list today. And this week I decided to do something a little different. I'm going to do the top five greatest NBA playoff runs because there's been quite a few. Now, I don't really expect anybody from this season to kind of make any of these runs because there really isn't. Also, you know, since we're talking NBA, the Phoenix Suns clinched the number one seed last night in the playoffs. So they will be the number one seed. But I don't expect them to make the kind of run that these top five teams that I'm going to name off made. I just thought it was something interesting to discuss since we're getting close to the playoff time. And there are five great runs that I feel like were kind of, when I went over it and kind of did my research on this and was, you know, looking at the stats and seeing what they all did and who they all played against, I was like, damn, this is, it's actually very easy. It was very easy for me to pick my top five. But yeah, it was very fun and interesting to go over all these teams. So let's go over my top five greatest NBA playoff runs, starting with number five, the 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers. This was the, LeBron James coming back from, he initially left the Cavaliers, went and played with the Miami Heat for a few seasons, and then he ended up coming back to Cleveland because, LeBron's, like, number one thing he ever wanted to do was bring a championship to Cleveland. And that was something he always said. So he ended up going back to Cleveland. And so in the 2016 season, they were the number one. They were the number one seed out in the East, Eastern Conference. This was LeBron James, Kyrie Irving. It was a really good squad. And overall, their postseason record was 16-5. And so 16 wins, 5 losses, not bad at all. They started off the series with the first round against the Detroit Pistons, who they swept 4-0. And they moved on to the Atlanta Hawks, who then they also swept 4-0. Moved on to the Eastern Conference Finals, where they faced the Toronto Raptors, who actually put up a good fight against them. But Cleveland ended up getting the best of Toronto and ended up winning that series 4-2. And then we went on to one of the greatest NBA finals in history against the Golden State Warriors. Because if you don't remember, around this 3 to 5 year time period, it was just basically Cleveland versus Golden State. It was just back and forth, up and down. And this was the year that the Cavaliers actually got the best of Golden State. They were down 3-1. Nobody has ever come back from that kind of deficit in the NBA finals. And this was also the Golden State Warriors who had who broke the record for the best regular season record at 73-9. So they were a solid team, great spectacular team. This was a Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Andre Iguodala, Draymond Green. You know, this is a spectacular, spectacular team. But one of the game changers was Draymond got suspended, and and so he missed the game, and the Cavaliers ended up getting that win. But they came back, and you can't say it was just that. You know, Cleveland really played some spectacular basketball down the stretch, and they just ended up winning Game 7. And they ended up winning the finals with 4-3. And LeBron James was the MVP, and he got to bring home a championship, the one and only championship that the Cleveland Cavaliers have, probably going to be their only one ever, because I don't really see how that's going to happen. I don't know who wants to go play for Cleveland. Yes, they do have a very solid team this year, but I don't think they're going to be winning no championship. But that's, you know, and a couple of in Game 7 on this run here, Two of the big plays were LeBron had this huge chase down block against Andre Iguodala in game 7, and then Kyrie Irving just dropped this, sunk this dagger three right over Steph Curry. So it was just a great battle between two great teams. And, you know, LeBron brought a championship to Cleveland. Then number four on my top five greatest NBA playoff runs, the 1989 Detroit Pistons. This team is one of the greatest teams of all time, in my opinion. They were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Their postseason record, they were 15-2. This was the Bad Boys, by the way. This was Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars. This was Dennis Rodman as well before he went to the Chicago Bulls. You know, this was Lambeer. I mean, these guys, these guys could not exist in today's NBA. We'll just say that. They were motherfuckers, and they would kill everybody, including my Lakers on this playoff run. But let's start with, in the first round, they faced the Boston Celtics, swept them 3-0. Then they faced the Milwaukee Bucks, swept them 4-0. Then the Eastern Conference Finals, they faced off against Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls. And this was when Michael Jordan couldn't get over the Detroit Pistons. And the Detroit Pistons just dominated Michael Jordan at this time. I mean, dominated. They wore him the fuck out in this Eastern Conference Finals. And they ended up winning the series 4-2. And then they would move on to the NBA Finals against my Los Angeles Lakers and sweep the fuck out of them 4-0. And they just dominated this entire run. MVP ended up being Joe Dumars. They just were such a solid defensive team. There really hasn't been a team like that, this Bad Boys Detroit Pistons squad either, especially the 1989 season. They are one of the grimiest fucking teams you will ever see. You know, I really enjoyed them, even though they beat the Lakers. I'm not trying to discredit the Pistons because obviously they were a great team, but Magic Johnson was injured this season. He did play a couple of the games in the finals, but I think the injuries were getting to him at the end. And then Byron Scott also did not play in the series at all. So that does take away from what the Lakers had, but they didn't have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at that time, so I don't think they had anybody who could really go up against what the Detroit Pistons were doing defensively at that time, especially in the paint. So they are number four on my top five greatest NBA playoff run teams. Number three on my top five greatest NBA playoff run teams is the 2017 Golden State Warriors. They were the number one seed in the Western Conference. And their postseason record, they went 16-1. They only lost one game in this playoff run. As a matter of fact, they set the longest playoff win streak in this playoff run at 15-0. They didn't lose all the way up until the NBA Finals. So they first faced off against the Portland Trail Blazers, who they swept 4-0. Then they faced the Utah Jazz, who they swept 4-0. Then they went up against the San Antonio Spurs, who, by the way, were one of the top teams that year. They swept their asses 4-0. And that says a lot. That really says a lot when you sweep the San Antonio Spurs. Because the Spurs will take you to the brink. Even if they lose the series, they will take you to the brink. But the Golden State Warriors swept their asses that year. And then they went up against Cleveland in the NBA Finals, and they nearly swept them as well. They took the series 4-1. Kevin Durant was the MVP of that NBA Finals. But that was a great playoff run. They just absolutely obliterated and dominated those teams. Because also, too, Portland, they weren't no chumps. They had Damian Lillard at the time. Utah Jazz were a solid team. Cleveland wasn't that good this year as they were the season before. Also at the same time, Golden State, they dominated this season from start to finish. Also to note, too, this was the season where Steve Kerr missed a lot of the season because of he had back surgery. And the back surgery, it wasn't really successful, so he kept getting these horrible migraines. And so he had to take off, like, half the season. And I remember he didn't really come back until, like, the second half of the season or more close to the playoffs. So, I mean, they were able to sustain that type of championship run. Now, granted, they were a great team. This was with Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson. You know, they had a great team. So they were able to maintain without Steve Kerr and makes this spectacular playoff run. So number two on my top five greatest NBA playoff runs is the 1991 Chicago Bulls. They were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Their postseason record was 15-2. The Warriors in 2017 had a better record overall in the postseason, but the teams that the Bulls played, I think were better, and they dominated them. They just dominated better teams, in my opinion. So basically, this was the beginning of the Chicago Bulls dynasty. This was the first championship for Michael Jordan. So this was a big deal, and they just absolutely dominated. They first faced off against the New York Knicks. They swept them 3-0. Then they went up against the Philadelphia 76ers. They took that series 4-1. Then they played Detroit, who kicked their ass just a couple seasons ago. And they were able to absolutely dominate them and take them out and sweep that series 4-0. Then they went on to the NBA Finals against the Los Angeles Lakers. This was actually the last season Magic Johnson would play, which he had a great season, by the way. The Lakers were headed into this looking like they were going to take out Jordan. And Michael Jordan was like, fuck y'all. This is the beginning of my dynasty. This is the beginning of Jordan owning the NBA forever and for always. He just absolutely dominated that NBA Finals. And they killed the Lakers 4-1. And like I said, it was the beginning of that dynasty. And that great playoff, great run. Not only just a great playoff run in 1991, but like I said, this was the start of it. And of course, the MVP was Michael Jordan. This was the start of it. And they would just go on to absolutely dominate until Jordan would have the year and a half off where he would go play baseball or whatever. I put them at number two. So my number one on my top five greatest NBA playoff runs should be no surprise to anybody. I mean, of course, this is a great playoff run. But it had to be my 2001 Lakers. Now, the funny thing is the Lakers were actually the number two seed in the Western Conference this year because the San Antonio Spurs, they were on a tear too. This was actually peak, Lakers-Kings rivalry, Lakers-Spurs rivalry. I mean, this was a great team. You know, this was Kobe, Shaq, Derek Fisher, Paul George. You know, we are not Paul George. What the hell is his name? I can't remember. Last name was George, but I can remember his face. I remember everything about him. I loved watching him play, and now I can't freaking remember his first name, but whatever. They had a great team. Loved this team. Probably one of my favorite Lakers championship teams of all time. Their postseason record was 15-1. And the reason why they are number one overall easily, in my opinion, is because the playoff run that they went on, they beat some badass motherfucking teams. So in the first round, it ended up facing the Portland Trail Blazers, who were one of the best teams in the Western Conference that season, and they swept them 3-0. Then they would go on to play their rivals, the Sacramento Kings, who they dominated them, and they swept them, went on to win that series 4-0. Then they would face the number one overall seed in the Western Conference, the San Antonio Spurs. And you know what they did to them? They swept the Spurs 4-0. So then we would move on to the NBA Finals. And they would face the Philadelphia 76ers. And their only loss in this entire playoff run was game one of the NBA Finals, where then after they lost game one, they would go on to win four games in a row and absolutely dominate the Philadelphia 76ers. And the MVP would end up being Shaquille O'Neal. But, you know, like I said, this playoff run was big because at the time, I said they started off with the Portland Trail Blazers. Well, they had Sean Kemp and Scottie Pippen on the team at the time. And I know most people remember Scottie Pippen for being a Chicago Bull, but his time with the Portland Trail Blazers, he was actually pretty damn good for quite some time with them. So this was a good Portland Trail Blazers team. Then you move over to the Sacramento Kings, and this is when they have Chris Webber and Vlade Divac on the team. So that's a good-ass team. Then you move over to the San Antonio Spurs, who had two Hall of Fame perennial players named Tim Duncan and David Robinson. So they absolutely dominated them. And then they absolutely dominated Philadelphia 76ers, who had Allen Iverson on that team. So you really can't argue with them being number one. I mean, you kind of can if you're a Warriors fan, but I mean, really, the Lakers took out some stacked powerhouse teams in this playoff run, and it really just set them apart from everybody else. They would go on and win another one the next season. Actually, they would go on to the NBA Finals the next two seasons, win the next one, and then lose the next one, and then it would be the, you know, the whole Kobe-Shaq breakup. But this 2001 Lakers team, great fucking team, and they are number one on my top five greatest NBA playoff runs of all time. So, yeah, that's today's show. We got a lot of basketball again this weekend. Like I said, my bracket's completely busted. My only hope is UCLA, so UCLA, UCLA. I need y'all to keep it moving, because if UCLA loses tonight, I am fucked for my bracket. So good luck to the rest of y'all. My homie Simon's bracket's looking pretty solid right now, especially because his championship is Arkansas versus Houston. So his is pretty set right now. So we'll see what happens, and I will talk to you guys on Monday.